welcome to this week's edition of the Video News InScreen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from InScreen Media joins me. Hi there, Colin. How are you?
I am doing very well, Will. A busy week this week. We had Netflix numbers. We had announcements from Hulu, lots of data on SVOD. But today, I think we're going to focus on Netflix numbers. So why don't you kick it off, Will, because they had a great quarter, didn't they?
Yeah, I was just going to say it would be hard not to focus on Netflix in today's podcast simply because their results, their Q2 17 results announced earlier this week were, you know, truly noteworthy. There's no other way to put it. I mean, not trying to be, you know, hyping here, but the subscriber numbers both domestically and internationally were far beyond what anybody expected they were going to come in at, including Netflix itself. So we want to talk a little bit about the growth. We want to talk a little bit about some of the inputs to that. And then we'll certainly get to talking about Hulu a little bit at the end of the podcast as well. So just to kick things off, you know, as listeners likely know by now, Netflix added a total of about 5.2 million subscribers in second quarter. A little over a million of that was domestic, and about 4.14 million of that was internationally. So at the very top line, international is still the major, major driver of overall Netflix subscriber growth. That's been the case now for many, many quarters. In this second quarter, fully, you know, 80% or more of the overall subscribers came internationally. But just to kind of measure or compare those growth, both the domestic and international growth, to what Netflix itself was forecasting, they were aiming for 600,000 ads domestically. Again, they brought in over a million. They were aiming for 2.6 million ads internationally. They brought in 4.14, so pretty big beats on both. And just to focus a little bit on domestic, so, you know, as I wrote this piece earlier this week about sort of the five main takeaways from this second quarter earnings report. And one of them focused on domestic was that it's getting increasingly, as if it wasn't already murky, it's getting increasingly murky to understand where Netflix really is on the so-called S curve of adoption. Listeners will likely know that the so-called S curve measures the rate of adoption of new technologies, new services, et cetera. And just to kind of look back at the history of Netflix's second quarter, the last time they even broke a million subscriber adds in second quarter domestically was 6 years ago in Q2 2011, when they added 1.8 million subscribers. All right. Just in the last 3 years, if you look at 2015, they added 900,000 in second quarter. Then they plummeted to 160,000 in Q2 16, and now they've spiked up to over a million in Q2 17. And so you look at these numbers and you sort of feel like you could get whiplash by looking at them. Like, what is the pattern here? And I think the conclusion is that there really is no pattern. And a year ago, Netflix was complaining that a price increase had completely tanked their numbers. Now they're coming back with a million subscribers added. So we see clearly still a very strong appetite for new subscribers at the higher price level. We also have no insights whatsoever about Netflix's churn because they stopped reporting those numbers a long time ago. And so we're all sort of guessing where they stand domestically, but, you know, they've said for a long time they believe that they can get to between 60 and 90 million subscribers. The law of large numbers obviously indicates that it's going to get harder and harder to add subscribers at prior rates, but yet here we are in Q2 with them adding a million. So that's some thoughts. Those are some thoughts on domestic. International is yet another sort of murky situation. So we know that they've increased their number of countries that Netflix is available in to over 200. Q2 of 2015, they added 2.37 million subscribers internationally. Then in 2016, they dropped to 1.52 million. And then in 2017, they're obviously back up, way up now to over 4.1 million. So I find myself just wondering, like, what are the drivers of what's going on internationally since these numbers are all over the board? And so clearly Netflix is growing great, which is, you know, good for them, no question. But I guess I would say, as a sort of an observer and an analyst, trying to really understand what's driving these numbers so, you know, sort of on such a roller coaster year over year is really challenging. So that's sort of my take, my initial take, at least on subscribers. We'll talk about other stuff as well, but what's your take on the subscriber growth?
So domestically, obviously very great, very good numbers. And the first thing that I thought about when I saw those numbers was I wondered, so Netflix is clearly into what we call the late adopters on the S curve, right? They've got all the early adopters and all the middle, you know, the people in the middle, and they're now solidly into the late adopters. And what they've done is they've sort of adjusted their marketing strategy here in the US to sort of cope with that. And so they're doing two things about that, well, three things really. Thing one was partnerships with operators. So they've done a partnership with Comcast to resell and be available on the Xbox set-top box. They're doing a lot more marketing, I think, than they were before. So I think they've adjusted their strategy. And of course, the third thing is great original content, continuing to provide great original content. And I think those three things really now are coming together, Will, to bring in those late adopters and get them to sign up for the service. They're getting great word of mouth on a lot of the shows now. They're getting a lot of coverage. They're getting Emmy nominations. So they're really positioning the company as something that you've got to have, right? Because there's just a lot of people talking about the content that's on the service. And if you want to be able to have the conversations with other people about that, you've got no choice but to sign up. So I think that's one of the reasons why they continue to defy what we would consider normal adoption curves, because they're just getting great word of mouth. And you know, I was listening to the earnings call. Reed Hastings is such a fascinating person because he really he's still 100% focused on growth. And he and Ted Sarandos said some things that just really resonated with me about how they're thinking about the service. Ted Sarandos was asked about how he thought about Netflix and whether it was like a TV channel or whether it was something else. And he said, look, we're a super channel. We're not like a regular, like an ABC or a CBS or a Fox. He said we're building content that cuts across many, many genres. And that I think really articulates very well the way they think about this company. They think that it's kind of like an amalgam of ABC, NBC, and Fox. You've got to kind of have this service if you want to be a 21st century TV viewer. So that came across pretty clearly, actually, in the discussions. And Reed Hastings, he just keeps focused on growth. He said, we're such a small player in our viewing compared to linear TV, compared to YouTube. We've got a long way to go to have more content to please more people. And in the past, he's compared himself to Facebook. He's got over 1 billion users. So for him, it's just all about growth. He's not that interested in profit, I'm sure he is interested in profit, but his main focus for the company is growth. And their continued investment in content, their continued investment in innovative partnerships with operators, these things I think are really starting to pay off now that they're moving into this late stage adopter.
So, Colin, let me just jump in quickly. Certainly, what you highlight about the role that their original content is playing in translating subscriber growth, that was a point that Netflix made very strongly in the call. No question about that. And there's no question also, they just got the 91 Emmy nominations last week. And, you know, they talked about how some of these shows only became, in subsequent seasons, only became available in the second quarter. There was still a lot of content that was available prior to the second quarter. So it's, you know, sort of understanding the exact cause and effect is a little bit murky. But there was a piece of research that hit my radar back in May, which basically said that 85% of Netflix's U.S. streams were actually from licensed content, not original content. And even to go one step further, just three of these licensed shows, The Office, Family Guy, and Friends, accounted for over 21% of all Netflix streams. So while on the one hand, we hear sort of the company line from you know, management about the role that original content is playing, and you know, I hear what you're saying about people just feeling like they need to have it, I think the picture is more complicated than that. And, you know, this research, and I'm, you know, keen to see if other research like this emerges, because you want to be careful about not hanging too much on one specific research report. But it was pretty emphatic. You know, again, 85% of Netflix's U.S. streams were licensed, not original. I feel like that says something about how people really use the service.
Wow, I did not see that research. I'm shocked. I'm very surprised about that. Indeed.
Yep, I still.
You know, one of the things that I hear a lot is the biggest criticism I hear of Netflix by folks, particularly of folks in the industry, is that just that there's nothing good on Netflix. You know, you dig down.
Can I just jump in? Isn't that an insane reaction to have when they've spent billions and billions of dollars on original content?
It is crazy, and I don't believe it for a minute, because I'm looking at the way we use it as a family, and yeah, they have their tentpole shows like House of Cards and Orange Is the New Black, but you know, you scratch below that, and what you find is a whole bunch of shows that feel very much like the same quality as shows you would find on broadcast TV. And I'm thinking about things like that, you know, they just did this thing, The Ranch, with Ashton Kutcher. And, yeah, you know, this show is nothing to write home about. But is it the sort of thing that you would find on a broadcast channel? Absolutely. It's exactly that quality. One Life to Live, they did that, the reboot of that. And again, it's not a fantastic show, but it just jogs along and entertains you for the moment, for the time that you're looking at it. So I think the criticism about Netflix is that there's nothing to watch and that the originals aren't that good below the tentpoles is wrong. And very clearly, these numbers prove that that's wrong, that people are finding stuff on Netflix to watch. I think early last year, or was it the year before, I did a project with Clearly, because they were there now they're part of IBM. And one of the things that they did ask was, have you cancelled an SVOD service? And among Netflix users, the number of people that said that they had cancelled was much lower than Hulu and Amazon. I can't remember the exact numbers. So on your churn point, I think churn is much lower on Netflix than other services. It's the one that most people just, you know, they just pay the bill every month. And they're clearly, you know, people are coming back. So they're really using the service now on a daily basis. It's part of their TV diet.
And, you know, I think all that is really interesting. I guess I would just say that, you know, notwithstanding all that, Colin, as you just said a couple of minutes ago, you feel like you talk to people all the time whose primary reaction is there's nothing on Netflix to watch, or, you know, there's little on Netflix to watch. So irrespective of all of that, that is still, you're reporting still on what people's reactions are.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm not trying to, like, you know, catch you in the flypaper sort of thing, but like there does seem to be some dissonance there, doesn't there?
There does. But it really, as I say, I always take it with a grain of salt. These are industry insiders who have an axe to grind.
Okay.
Well, and I'm looking at my usage of the service. And frankly, I never have a problem finding something to watch on Netflix.
All right. Well, as we know, beware of extrapolating too much from personal experiences. But be that as it may, there are two other angles that I think are worth talking about with respect to Netflix's numbers. And I mentioned both of these in my five takeaways. The first is that Reed Hastings has emphasized for ages now that he thinks people will subscribe to multiple SVOD services, the market is big enough, et cetera. Jeff Bezos at Amazon has made the exact same point, that it's not like buying, as he puts it, it's not like buying a truck. You're either going to buy a Ford or a Chevy type of thing, but you're not going to buy both. Whereas with SVOD services, yes, indeed, you or many people may in fact buy or subscribe to multiple services. So one of my takeaways from the Netflix Q2 numbers was that these guys may actually be right. And I've been a little bit skeptical on this, thinking that Amazon's emphasis on video at some point was going to start eating into Netflix a little bit. Doesn't appear to be doing that yet. So I feel like I'm having a little bit of a course correction myself in terms of how I'm thinking about the market. How about you?
Well, I absolutely agree with them that in the earnings call, one of the things that Reed Hastings said again was that he doesn't consider Amazon a direct competitor.
Right.
And he says, you can have us, you can have Amazon. And frankly, Jeff Bezos is betting his whole Amazon Prime strategy on the fact that people are going to buy multiple because of channels, right? That's exactly what that's aimed at. It's aimed at, the fact that people are going to buy multiple of these things and they're going to be a little bit cumbersome to deal with, and Amazon's going to make it easy to manage them all.
But I would just clarify one thing, Colin. I don't think that he's betting his entire video strategy on channels. I think channels is just one part of the video strategy. Channels could be a complete flop and Amazon could still do great in video overall. I just wanted to jump in with that one point.
So there's some truth to what you say there, Will, but I really do think that channels is a key strategy for its video client and video property. I mean, channels is the reason Amazon broke out the video portion so that you could subscribe separately to it. Yep. They did that because it's a storefront to get people to come in and buy subscribe to the SVOD services. So, and I've been watching the data from TiVo Digital Smiths about how much people are paying, and you definitely see for their SVOD services, and what you definitely see is people are paying more. It's very clear that they're subscribing to more than one. Many people are subscribing to more than one services. There was some data from Parks this week as well on exactly that.
Yep.
So very definitely there is a trend now towards people having multiple services, not just one. The interesting thing is, though, that it's still mostly the top three.
Right,
it's still, absolutely. It's still mostly Amazon, Hulu, and Netflix.
Yes.
So there is that data point. But, Channels is apparently working and is selling subscriptions to a lot of the other services. So.
And worth noting that Reed Hastings was asked whether Netflix would pursue a Channels-like program where they distributed third-party services in Netflix itself. And the reply was, no way.
In fact, wasn't that refreshing to actually hear somebody give a clear answer?
He basically said,
that's not right for us and we're not going to do it. There was one interesting thing that came up in the conversation, Will. We should talk a little bit more about the international stuff. Ted Sarandis talked a lot about the content that they were creating in foreign countries. And he was kind of schizophrenic because he talked about the real big success that they've had with Okja, I think it's called, from Korea.
Yeah. The movie, yeah.
Yeah, and he said, we make a fantastic movie for Korea, but it's even bigger story that the movie is getting watched by millions around the world. He said, and this is very much in line with something that he said in the past, which is that you get content created locally and you think globally. You create content locally that you think has global interest, that will pull more than just local viewers. But in the call, he went on to say, we have to get better and better at matching those tastes. And he was talking about problems with Asia. We have to get better and better at matching those tastes. And those tastes are not necessarily easily aligned with Western tastes. And so they're clearly trying to balance here between creating content in local markets that has global appeal and also creating content in local markets that really is only going to have local appeal, because they need to do both, because they, you know, that this is the best way that they're going to attract new subscribers in each region. And those finding the balance between investment in both of those areas, I think, is going to be a major challenge. And it actually made me think that a long, long time ago, when Netflix first went international, I had thought that the best strategy to do that was to form joint ventures, so that you worked with people in a particular market who knew that market really well and could help you pull in the right content to make your service successful. Now, they've clearly proved me wrong. They've clearly proved that they're doing just well managing this stuff fairly centrally as they are now. But this is one issue where having a JV would probably have benefited them, because having people in market, they'd be better able to balance, to find that balance. So, you know, it's interesting that they're still trying to find that balance, still trying to figure out particularly how to be successful in Asia. Make no mistake, Asia is a big challenge for them.
Yeah, and they're going to no doubt keep making that balance. I just want to – we're starting to bump up against our time a little bit. One last quick point I want to make is that the Netflix awesome results happen at the worst possible time for the pay TV industry, which will be big operators will be reporting their Q2 numbers over the next couple of weeks. Q2 is traditionally a seasonally soft quarter for the industry. And no doubt if we see big losses among operators combined with Netflix's great quarter, that's going to drive this whole cord cutting meme, which the, you know, online world and, you know, larger press world is consumed with, going to drive that meme to, I think, you know, unprecedented highs. We're going to see more articles about the rotation out of pay TV than ever before. So that's one thing to keep an eye on. And then last but not least, Colin, just wanted to check in. You know, Hulu had a significant announcement this week also with 20th Century Fox adding 3,000 episodes of some really popular catalog content to its service. Seems like a big positive for them too, right?
Yeah, huge positive. And of course, last week they announced that they've got they've added HBO and Cinemax, so now you can subscribe to them. I love this. I think Hulu has grown up. I think it's become what it was always meant to be, which is a great platform for broadcasters to market their content directly to consumers. It's really coming into its own now, and by the way, now looking like a very credible competitor to pay TV operators. And here we are, we're proving just what the web does really well. It's cutting out the middleman, and the broadcasters can go directly now to consumers through a product like Hulu.
Yep, so much good stuff going on in the industry right now, Colin. Fascinating to follow, isn't it?
It always is.
All right. Well, we want to keep to our time limit that we try to impose on ourselves. So with that, we'll say thanks for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News In Screen Media Podcast, and we'll see you all again next week.